over $5,000 was found between the desk and wall of the office of the now-suspended Ravalli County Treasurer. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. A Blackfeet man recently convicted of participating in a fraud scheme takes his case to federal court. And Flathead reporter Katrin Fry visits with members of the Northwest Montana Vietnam Veterans of America chapter.
When a Helena accounting firm finished the examination of the Ravalli County Treasurer's Office earlier this year, it found over $951,000 in cash and checks that now-suspended Treasurer Valerie Stamey hadn't deposited into county accounts. After Anderson Zermulin reconciled the bank accounts in May, it found the county was short just over $5,400. On Tuesday, county officials found the missing funds. County Attorney Bill Fulbright says five county officials, including two sheriff's deputies, searched Stamey's former office and discovered checks and currency totaling $5,367 lodged between her desk and the wall. Fulbright says no evidence of criminal conduct was found during Tuesday's search. Stamey was appointed to the post late September and suspended with pay in January. County commissioners suspended her with pay on June 25th after she refused to resign.
In other news from around the state, a Blackfeet man convicted in a scheme to defraud a federally funded youth program is taking his case to a federal appeals court in an attempt to have his 3.5-year prison sentence reduced. Delisle Chaney-Ogier was sentenced on June 24th after pleading guilty to conspiracy, embezzlement, and income tax evasion charges. Prosecutors say he and five other defendants stole money and doctored invoices to exaggerate what the tribe was contributing to the cost of the Poca project, which received $9.3 million in federal funding. Ogier attorney Colin Stevens said today Ogier is appealing U.S. District Judge Brian Morris's sentence. Stevens says he is asking the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to reconsider Morris' ruling that Ogier participated in a sophisticated fraud scheme, which could lessen the sentence if successful.
A group of American Indians wants the court to preserve and eventually release investigative file containing inappropriate emails sent by a federal judge to Indian advocacy groups from Montana and South Dakota, and a member of the Crow tribe filed a petition in U.S. District Court in California asking the file to be preserved as evidence. A judicial review panel found that Chief District Judge Richard Siebel sent hundreds of emails from his federal account showing disdain for blacks, Indians, Hispanics, women, and certain religions, including a racist message involving President Barack Obama. Groups want to know if Siebel made biased decisions during his time on the bench. Plaintiff's attorney Larry Organ says their next step will be to file a lawsuit seeking public release of those emails.
The reason we are trying to get these emails is because it's possible that the judge may have made some decisions that affected people coming before him. If a judicial official has a bias towards a particular group that is in front of that person seeking justice, it is our belief that that violates the United States Constitution's 14th Amendment protection for equal protection. Without that lack of bias on behalf of the judiciary, our entire legal system falls apart.
Siebel himself and 10 others requested a misconduct investigation after the Great Falls Tribune reported the judge forwarded an email in February 2012 that included a joke about bestiality in Obama's mother. Siebel was publicly reprimanded and he retired in 2013. The investigation found no evidence of bias in his rulings, but the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said his file on Siebel is confidential. Organ says judges who are appointed to the bench have an ethical obligation to decide cases in an unbiased manner, and Siebel's emails may reveal a pattern of bias in his rulings, which could affect previous rulings and even allow certain prisoners to petition for new trials.
You know, we're really not bringing the lawsuit in an effort to be punitive against Judge Siebel. What we really want to do is bring to light the fact that there is a need for a lack of bias in our judiciary. And I am sure 99.9% of the judges who sit on the bench now act in a way that is unbiased. But if there is one judge in one court anywhere in America who is making decisions that are based on a bias, then that's not justice.
The plaintiffs in the case include Montana-based Indian People's Action and Sarah Plains Feather, a member of the Southeastern Montana Crow Tribe.
A 32-year-old Pablo man is denying four felony charges after what prosecutors say was a brutal six-hour attack on a female acquaintance last month. Robert Mathewson is charged with two counts of sexual intercourse without consent, kidnapping, and aggravated assault. KERR-AM reports defense attorney Britt Cotter entered not guilty pleas on Mathewson's behalf today. Mathewson was arrested on June 24th and remains jailed with bail set at $150,000. District Judge Kim Christopher scheduled an October 14th trial. Court records say the woman reported Mathewson raped her, beat her, and chased her down after she escaped naked from his residence. Charging documents say she escaped a second time, hid in the woods as she got dressed, and ran to a friend's house. She was taken to the hospital on June 19th.
Montana is the home to many veterans and has the second highest per capita veteran population in the country. Some are native sons and daughters returning home. Others are seeking solitude or wide open spaces of Big Sky country. President of the recently formed Northwest Montana Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, John Burgess, says Flathead alone counts for more than 3,000 Vietnam veterans among its population. Flathead reporter Catherine Fry has more on the new chapter of the VVA as members prep for a 1968 military truck for an Independence Day parade.
The frame underneath, you can see where the line of green is going across underneath there. That'll be OD green, and then the frame is going to be black.
Dale Cordell served in the Army in Vietnam between 1970 and 1971. Cordell is among a group from Chapter 1087 of the Vietnam Veterans of America, working on a 1968 Kaiser military truck.
But all the main body parts we're going to do OD green. It ain't exactly 100% military, but you know, in the military they just kind of stood back and threw the paint on it and covered everything as green as they possibly could. So that's kind of what we're doing, is just we want to make it look as close to the trucks that we drove and rode in over there.
They're working in front of the Summers home of chapter president John Burgess.
And it was in military use up until about 85, and hence the brown that's on there right now. That's a radar reflected paint, which is just like iron to try to sand.
Dark greens are slowly overtaking the brown beige the truck has been painted, with black covering the front grille of the tall truck.
If we get time, we plan on putting POW MIA on the doors, and then on the front where this gentleman with the red bandana, Dennis Gomez there, he's going to, on the front of that bumper, POW MIA, never forget. And then on the back bumper on that, Jane Fonda is still an American traitor.
Burgess sides with other Jane Fonda critics who are angry about Fonda's actions when she traveled to Vietnam during the war. He says they plan to drive the truck in Kalispell's Independence Day parade with 17 people riding along.
And we'll all have, we're having shirts made up that says Welcome Home. And that's another personal statement to Vietnam veterans. We didn't get the welcome home that a lot of them, other branches of the service in different wars received.
They're also going to use it as a sort of billboard by parking it in specific locations and having it out during different events to get the word out about this chapter, which formed last September. Burgess served in the Navy from 1972 to 1976. He says they want to reach out to other Vietnam veterans, as well as others returning from military service.
If you'll read my card on there, it says, "Never again will one generation of veterans abandon another." And we don't want to see what happened to us happen to these veterans, and that because they stepped up and said, up to and including my life is what I signed my contract for.
Burgess says this means public support for changes to the Veterans Administration and personal support for those having a hard time dealing with the VA. Cordell says he got involved with the VVA when he was approached by Burgess, who saw Cordell's truck with Vietnam veteran stickers on it.
I'm in agreement that it's time that people started holding their heads up instead of turning away and not talking about Vietnam.
Cordell says it helps to meet with others who have been in combat, even all these years later.
I remember one day I went, ran over right after a rocket attack, and a 122 rocket had come in and hit right above the door on a dispensary, and there must have been about 20 guys at the dispensary standing in line, and every one of them was killed. I ran over there to see if I could help anybody, and I ended up just in the middle of a mess of dead bodies. And the looks on their faces, body parts here and there, I just went into shock, and there's nothing I can do here. That's forever up here. It'll never go.
Cordell was among the men who took part in the 10-day Run to the Wall from Los Angeles, California, to Washington, D.C. in May. He says the whole trip to the wall was healing.
Now people have had a chance to look at things and evaluate us and realize that we're not all the bad people that we were made out to be back during the war and afterwards. And there's a lot of people who still hide out in the woods. And you mention Vietnam and they'll just turn and walk away from you. I don't even want to talk about it. Well, it's time that people talked about it.
Steve Hegg grew up with Burgess and Summers and served in the Navy from 1969 to 1973.
I grew up the youngest of nine brothers, and I was the fifth of my brothers to join the Navy. So it was just kind of a traditional thing for me to do out of high school. But it just happened to be that in 69, that's when I graduated, and that's when I went into the Navy, and my first tour of duty was in country Vietnam.
Haig's second tour was aboard a ship in San Diego, and then he went on a guided missile frigate in Pearl Harbor and took two more trips to Vietnam on that ship. He also participated in the Run for the Wall this past May.
They told us, well, this will be the parade you didn't get when you came home. And for 10 consecutive days, they just made me feel like a hero.
Burgess says they didn't have to pay for gas or food for the entire journey, stopping to talk at schools and veterans' hospitals along the way. Steve Buck served in the Navy from 1965 to 1968 on an aircraft carrier in Asia. He says he got involved with the VVA because he was tired of the stigma attached to being a Vietnam veteran.
I was real tired of Vietnam veterans being painted as a bunch of psychopathic drug addicts.
Buck says in his travels, he spent his time in the woods.
And I knew a lot of other guys that did as well. And I finally came to the conclusion it was time to come out of the woods. And hopefully some of the other veterans will as well.
Burgess says that's part of the goal of the VVA, helping veterans come out of the woods and continuing that support once they do. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Three Montana communities have joined a statewide program meant to help revitalize and preserve historic downtown districts. Thompson Falls, Hamilton, and Cutbank are now part of the Montana Main Street program. That's a collaborative effort between the Community Development Division and the Montana Office of Tourism at the Montana Department of Commerce. Coordinator Tosh Weismiller says the Montana Main Street program helps members with technical assistance and competitive grant funding opportunities.
And at present, with our new member additions of Thompson Falls, Hamilton, and Cutbank, we're up to 24 members that we work with. But it's important to also point out that we work with all Montana communities. We're a state-funded program, so we do work with all communities that are dedicated to improving their downtowns. But we really focus on that membership and the communities that have indicated that they're really dedicated and have a long-term plan towards their downtown.
Weismiller says these downtown districts and small businesses they're comprised of are found all over Montana.
We have great downtowns in our state. We're located between national parks, and you know, we have huge tourism numbers that are growing year in and year out. And one of the things that they're looking for are downtown shopping experiences that are localized and that are independent, something original to Montana that really captures the spirit of Montana. So you see huge numbers seeking those out, not only just in non-resident visitors, but residents as well.
He points out Hamilton recently completed its master's plan and is preparing to implement components of that document.
Thompson Falls, they have a large vision and goals that demonstrate a larger comprehensive approach to community. So public facilities and parks and infrastructure, and really indicating and finding the economic impacts of those components, the bigger picture of a community. And then Cutbank is a really bold move to the local chamber purchased the landmark historic downtown building, which long sat vacant for decades. And they're developing housing and retail in that building, but also tying that to developing local tourism, the walkability and safety of the downtown core, and connecting those blocks in a larger business district.
The Montana Main Street Project awarded over $50,000 in grant funds during the last fiscal year.
And now for tonight's forecast. Across our listening area this evening, there will be a chance of clouds with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows should be mostly in the 50s. Independence Day should bring a few more clouds with a chance of thunderstorms in central and southwest Montana, and highs across the region in the 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Evan Barrett.
Happy 4th of July, Independence Day, tomorrow. But the old red, white, and blue looks a little more tattered this year compared to the past. For today, thanks in great part to the U.S. Supreme Court, John Q. Citizen, the human being citizen who is the bedrock of our unique experiment in self-governance, is being replaced by John Q. Corporation. There was a time in the United States when John Q. Citizen was the most honored and respected title one could hold in this democracy of ours. While striving for the common good has been the hallmark of the American experience, the individual citizen reigns supreme in our hierarchy. We anointed that citizen with many rights and protections: free speech and the right to assemble, freedom from unreasonable governmental search and seizure, the right of self-governance anchored by the right to vote, though it took many years to perfect that right. We promised that the government would not impose religion upon the individual citizen and, in fact, said the government would not interfere with his practice of his religion or the practice of any and all religions. And we sought to provide to the citizen the opportunity to succeed through education and the chance to earn a decent living for himself and his family by honoring and rewarding the value of his labor and even his capital. We even created a legal vehicle by which he could participate in commerce with some protections. That legal vehicle was a corporation. An individual citizen could conduct business by investing in a corporation, either by himself or with other citizens in large or small numbers. Many legal protections were provided to that corporation in order for commerce to advance. In that structure, people, citizens, made up corporations. But corporations were not people. Corporations were not citizens. Rights and protections given to corporations to help them conduct commerce on behalf of citizens were not intended to turn the legal contrivance of the corporation itself into a full-fledged, fully empowered citizen. But today, the honored position of John Q. Citizen is being overshadowed by the position of John Q. Corporation. Rights of citizenship are repeatedly being given to corporations by the current Supreme Court, while at the same time the rights of individual American citizens are being eroded or eliminated by that same Supreme Court. It seemed almost laughable back in August of 2011 when I heard Mitt Romney declare that, quote, corporations are people, my friend, close quote. But that really isn't just a punchline for late-night TV comics. We are increasingly seeing the Supreme Court and various appellate courts hell-bent on giving rights to John Q. Corporation while cutting back on your rights as John Q. Citizen. First case in point, voting rights. Just 1 year ago, the Supreme Court activist majority of five declared that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 had achieved its goals and voter discrimination and suppression had ended in the states and jurisdictions that had previously been required to get their voting law changes approved by the Justice Department prior to enactment or implementation. Not surprisingly, since then, an all-out assault of voting rights and extremely restrictive voter suppression measures emerged all across the country. Today, thanks in large part to the Supreme Court, voting is much more difficult all across America for John Q. Citizen. Contrast that with the decisions of the Supreme Court in Citizens United and affiliated cases, where corporations not only have free speech, but money is free speech, and corporations are entitled to spend whatever amount they want to influence elections. And they are spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars each election cycle to purchase the best Congress and state legislatures that money can buy. To do this, the Supreme Court actually threw out Montana's restriction on corporate dollars in elections that was passed by the people of the Treasure State way back in 1912. So the court has opened the door for making it harder for people, John Q. citizen, to vote while enabling John Q. Corporation to purchase the political processes of America. The latest affront was last week when the Supreme Court declared that John Q. Corporation can now have religious beliefs, beliefs that can control the right of John Q. citizen and Jane Q. citizen to access certain forms of reproductive health care. Now, I fully subscribe to the protection of individuals' rights of freedom of religion, and I know that sometimes those rights, when applied to all citizens, often lead to conflict. It's been said that my freedom to throw a punch ends at your nose. But this Supreme Court decision addresses that inherent conflict by unbelievably empowering the corporation itself to have religious beliefs. The slippery slope of empowerment of John Q. Corporation continued. This is Evan Barrett in Butte, looking at our slightly tattered flag of citizenship and hoping that John Q. Citizen will someday be restored to his place of honor in our structure.
Evan Barrett is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.